All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
Welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and screwing you and bending you over and doing all the things that they do. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico. I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States. I ran from a hammock down here in Mexico, and I'm currently running for governor of Texas from down here in Mexico in the very same hammock. Yes, I'm running for U.S. offices from Mexico. How can I do that? I don't know. I'm still registered to vote in California and Texas. Figure that one out. Now, I'm required by law to tell you that you should not listen to this show if you suffer from PTSD, depression, or have suicidal thoughts. Thanks, government, for keeping you safe. Today's guest is Chris Hunter, one of the directors of the United States Bugler Corps, former Army combat engineer, and he studied in college for Homeland Security and Emergency Management. So this should be really interesting. But before we get started, we're going to talk all about the Boogaloo and some really interesting things. But before we get started, I just want to take a quick minute to ask you for your support with this podcast and all the other amazing projects that we do. Spreading the word that taxation is theft, resisting the state, resisting tyranny, and getting people to stop obeying these unjust, illegal, unconstitutional orders. Go to taxationistheft.cards where you can get so many things. This giant taxation is theft flag behind me, this really awesome taxation is theft hat, and there's so many other things there. We've got awesome t-shirts, we've got awesome toys and gimmicks and all kinds of other stuff. But that's enough about that. On to the show. Chris, welcome. How's it going?
What's up? It's going, man. It's going. It's good times.
So, yeah, it's certainly interesting times.
Yes.
It's, you know, all the time. It's funny. One of the reasons I came to Mexico a while ago was because I saw the direction the United States was going. And I'm still an American, right? I'm still like, I've got skin in the game. But at the same time, I'm doing things that are pissing off the government, and it's nice to keep a safe distance. And also, I see all these things happening, like, you know, the political environment is always getting worse. Like, people are fighting and rioting and looting and all this other crazy nonsense. So it's like, shit's going downhill. I don't want much to do with that, especially because I felt that I was just absolutely alone. There was, if I wanted to stay and fight that fight, nobody would have my back. But then I started hearing about the Boogaloo and I was like, oh, this is interesting. So, and of course there's like tons of misconceptions about what this is. So let's just jump in. And yeah. Who are you and what is the Boogaloo to you? And why did you get involved in this?
So, I'm Chris Hunter. My call sign is Obi Boog Kenobi. That was given to me because apparently I say things that are wise. I don't know. I got out of the Army in 2016, and pretty much by then I was full-fledged libertarian, minarchist, you know, well on my way to voluntarist. And I started getting plugged into a lot of these groups, like whether it be, you know, Facebook and YouTube channels and things like that. And in 2016, the Boogaloo wasn't necessarily a thing. It was, there was some memes. It was a joke, you know, kind of things like that. But as time rolled on, people started pointing out things that I guess the average American just doesn't think about, you know, police brutality being a thing, you know, just like government overreach in general. I mean, to be honest, I didn't even ever think about things like no-knock raids until I started getting involved in like the libertarian type groups and things like that. And you know, and you're kind of raised in this thing of like respect police, you know, respect the badge and whatnot. And when you hear that, you know, something bad happens, you know, a cop screws up, it's always like, well, you know, there's just a few bad apples. But then it kind of starts.
But they never talk about taking the bad apples out of the barrel, right? It's like, yeah, there's a few rotten apples in there, but we're going to leave them.
And here's what I don't understand is being in the Boogaloo movement, you know, we get labeled as extremists, as white supremacists, as then this and that. We actively go after those people, root them out, and get them out of the movement, but we're still labeled that. The cops or the United States government in general, or any level of government that uses fear tactics and coercion, they don't get labeled these bad things. I was in the military. There are plenty of white supremacists in the military, but I don't think that the United States Army is a white supremacist organization, you know, but the same with the police. I do know that there are good cops out there. And I do know that there is a growing number of police that are taking a look at the Constitution and the oath they took. And they're realizing, you know what? We got to do something about this because I'm tired of getting lumped in with these bad apples. I just don't know how to get them out there because I'm a beat cop. So, you know, I get more and more involved and the Boogaloo keeps popping up. And I mean, I just kind of jump right in because I don't know. It just kind of felt like home, you know? And then like the Virginia gun rally day happened. And that was the first time I think the world, or at least the United States, saw people in the Hawaiian shirt step out on the street. And it was like, it was this moment of like, okay, are we going to keep spreading memes or are we about this, like for real about this? Because you've got pages at that time that had 35,000 people following them, you know? And it was like, do we have, like, is this for real? You know, is there really this many people? And then when it came to stepping out onto the street, you know, wearing this, you realize that there was a lot of people that really just wanted to make memes.
Right.
And they didn't want to step out onto the street. And then those select few that did, those were the people that they take the principles of liberty, the non-aggression principle, and the foundation of this country so seriously that they're willing to make whatever sacrifice needs to be made for it.
Right. I'm guessing that was about 3% of them.
You know, honestly, from I mean, it's so hard to get some kind of account,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
it's difficult.
I've been to events.
I mean, like with Facebook, you can never tell because, you know, like people just like they see one meme and they like it and then they start following a page and then you have all the bots and everything else. So yeah, it's always really difficult to tell. But when people show up and you can actually gauge the numbers, I think that's kind of really telling. But I think there's also, you've got a lot of people who are still even afraid to show up. So I was at, I don't know if you're talking about the same Virginia gun rally. I want to say February.
It was on Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Would be it. So I was there. And I remember because this was like pre-corona. Yeah. We were in a group, and a couple of the guys had like bandanas covering their faces. And the cops were, you know, they were just standing there mostly just, you know, they weren't doing too much. They did end up arresting a couple of people, but they were like, you know, trying to show their force. And they were just like, take your mask off as we were walking by. And, you know, just yelling out orders and things. And it's like I can see that as a security concern because, you know, just as we've seen with the riots, just by showing up, they might not arrest you there when there's 30,000 people standing around. But they can always track you back with facial recognition and all this other stuff and find you and then go plant something on you or, you know, accidentally shot him, whatever they want to do. But now we actually have the advantage of what's going on with COVID where we can cover our faces and get away with it or not be harassed about it. So I think that's really interesting, but I think that all kind of plays into the fear of, you know, yeah, I mean, you already have like a lot of fear. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to be able to stand up to tyrants and say, I could possibly lose my life, but it's a stand I must take. But then you have the other people who are like, I'm not quite that courageous. If I can at least take some measures of precaution, then I'd be more likely to go out there if I knew it was safer.
Yeah.
And you'd have that extra support. But yeah, so we kind of have to overcome some of that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. We tell everyone that wants to be involved, there is a place for everyone at every level. Because, you know, if you have computer skills and, you know, you're good at Photoshop or you're a good artist or things like that, you know, but you're like, I'm not ready to go out on the street yet. That's totally fine. I mean, as libertarians, we believe in voluntary association. And when someone comes to us and say, I want to be associated with this, but there is a fear that's legitimate, you know, in me getting involved, like, you know, I have a family or, you know, my career. I mean, people getting doxxed left and right and things like that. And so, you know, we really try hard to make sure everyone knows that you have a place with us, and that if you want to do something, we can definitely find you something to do.
Stay home and keep that 3D printer running.
Right? Right?
Yeah, and it's really interesting, too. I want to go back to something that you said about how the Boogaloo is labeled as a white supremacist movement or as an extremist movement and all these other things. And I want to point out that, like, it's extremely difficult to, you know, because you've got the government, and the government is obviously in cooperation with the media to some degree. Some people will say, you know, conspiracy theory levels. Some people will say, no, it's just, you know, a working relationship that they must maintain. Whatever it is, there is that relationship. And because of that, all the White House has to do, or all, you know, any branch of government has to do is print out a press release and send it to the news, and they will pick it up and they will run it. And and that reaches millions of people, hundreds of millions of people, with these messages. Mm-hmm. So all they have to do is say, we don't like this group, we're going to do something to shut them down. And it doesn't always have to be accurate. And we've seen it a million times in the past. And it's not always easy to differentiate when they're doing this. It's not always easy to know. And it can be scary. If, you know, you hear, oh my God, the streets aren't safe, I shouldn't go out tonight. A lot of people are like, they're just going to trust that information and say, well, it's better safe than sorry. I'm just not going to go out. I'll let the government deal with it, with whatever problem is out there. And then I'll go out tomorrow when it's safe. Because, you know, we just, as a society, we probably not us here, but a lot of people will just trust whatever's out there almost as a threat, right? Like if somebody says, I'm going to kick your ass if I see you around here, like you don't necessarily know that they're actually going to do anything, but you don't really want to just sit there and like, well, let's find out. You know, the guy's bigger than me. Like, Let's find out. No. And so when the government comes and like makes a threat, like, oh yeah, there's this big organization, you usually just listen to the threat and say, okay, well, I'm going to stay safe and stay away from that. And these people must be the enemy, and I'll keep paying my taxes so that the government can deal with them in the appropriate way. But you have also like, you know, like you were talking about how, you mentioned something about like, you know, the government does all these bad things, and Edward Snowden, who was working for the government, came out as a whistleblower, released all this information, and for years they have been trying to hunt him down and kill him, probably do whatever they can to shut him up. And just a few days ago, the courts ruled that no, actually he didn't do anything illegal. And they ruled that everything that the government was doing that he reported was actually illegal. So, like, this whole time, the government was sticking to its guns, saying, like, no, what we're doing is absolutely legal, and this guy's the criminal. And the whole time, that was wrong. Just because they ruled on it a couple days ago doesn't mean, like, something changed. No, it was wrong the whole time. And how are we to know if we trust the government?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the thing is standing up to tyrants is a dangerous business. You know, I mean, honestly, I'm on here. My face is uncovered. This is my real name. I understand that the level of danger that I've put myself in. But I feel like that it's needed. Essentially, like, someone has to do it, you know. I have friends that my friend Shifty, he was on ABC Nightline. He wore his mask, and I was out there with him that night when Nightline was filming, and I totally understand that approach as well, because, you know, like I said, standing up to tyrants is a dangerous business. And you know, the thing is we're not doing anything wrong. We're not trying to cause any violence. We're simply saying that there's a box called the Constitution, and everyone that is employed by the United States government, whether they were hired, enlisted, commissioned, whatever the case may be, they have agreed to a contract. That contract is the Constitution. And all we're saying is stop breaching the contract. Just do what you're supposed to do, and everything is going to be fine. You know, I think it's funny that, you know, the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security both came out and talked about how the Boogaloo movement was a dangerous organization or movement or whatever like that. And to be honest, if you look at what we would like as Americans, not even as Boogaloo, but just as, hey, there's a Constitution, can you please just follow it? Well, of course the Department of Homeland Security would think of us as a threat, because they're an unconstitutional branch of the government. And if
everyone, jobs are at stake, you know, here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're going to lose their jobs if people get back in, you know, if the government gets back inside the box of the Constitution. So yes, we are a threat in that aspect, but to say that we're violent, and then use anecdotal evidence, use, you know, these lone wolf events or these outlying extremists to label the entire movement is just like saying, you know, you know, everybody in the military is a white supremacist because there's five of them, you know.
Right. Yeah. And there seems to be a lot of that kind of confirmation bias too, where people will use generalizations when it, you know, serves their side of whatever their agenda is. But then they'll absolutely demolish it when it's against them. Like, so for example, with the police, you know, you say, you know, here's an example of an officer doing something bad, and you have most proponents of the government saying, oh yeah, but that's just the one bad apple. But then if you have, you know, one crazy guy with a gun who doesn't even claim to be part of the Boogaloo, that's the Boogaloo, and that's everybody involved, and that's, yeah, you know, the yeah, entire movement. And it's absolutely insane. And the same thing, it hurts that I hate that I spend so much energy on this, but I see the same thing with Black Lives Matter, because you have the people who are like, who are self-proclaimed Marxists who are part of that movement, but then you just have the other people who are just like, no, Black Lives Matter, and they don't know anything about the Marxism that's associated with it. And it's like, it's this mixing of language. I mean, it comes back down to the same thing, right? The government has used propaganda, and this goes back to, like, you know, the kings of England that you know, I think that originally started changing the definition of anarchy to mean chaos and violence in the streets and all this other nonsense, which literally it doesn't mean any of that. It just means
no
rulers. But it's like they changed the definition, and that's a tactic that the government always uses, and it's something that they can always use because they have such that close relationship with the media. Because all it takes is the media to say, this is what this word means, and hundreds of millions of people will hear it, and then it's a numbers game. If 50% believe it, 25% strongly advocate it and share that, reinforce that with everybody else. They have just destroyed the meaning of a word, and now nobody can back that word up. And they can do that. They do that to take down their opponents, and they also do that to support themselves, to make an unconstitutional act or an illegal act appear to be legal.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, like, from a lot of what I've seen in this movement, is getting involved in your community. And really, this is what it comes down to, is we have to, I understand paying attention to what the crazy people are doing in Washington, D.C. and everything, but a lot of people spend so much time on that, and they don't spend any time on their own communities. And what I've found out in my community is, here come all the rumors, here come all the media talk about what the Boogaloo movement is. I go out on the street, and one of the first protests that I went to, I was met with a little bit of vitriol, a little bit of fear, but then people that I knew in my community that knew who I was and knew that what I stand for stood up for me and my group and explain to everyone, these guys, they're here to keep the peace. They're here to help. They're here just to make sure that, you know, everyone is supported and everyone's voice is heard. And shortly after that, when the local media ran a smear story, like just a few days later, my own community jumped all over them on their Facebook post and just destroyed the entire narrative. And that's really your best course of action, is you get out there, you get involved in your community. I mean, I've been involved in my local music community since I was 15 years old. I'm 39 now. So, you know, I have a trusted base of, you know, people that I have in, you know, contacts with and everything. And so when I moved into this Boogaloo space, people already knew who I was. If you don't have the advantage of people already knowing who you are, then let them get to know you, get involved in whatever you can with your community, and they will back you up because they want you. They want you to help just like they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's a really important lesson too, because when you engage locally and you get to know people, like it's easy for you know, the media pushes one story, hundreds of millions of people see it. And then it's not as easy for you to say, oh, well, that turned out to be false. Even if the same news story, right? So let's say CNN publishes some story and it's absolute bullshit, but it gets picked up, it goes viral, people are like really interested in this story, it goes everywhere. And then some people start calling out CNN, and then even CNN is like, oh, well, yeah, okay, I guess our facts were wrong. We're going to issue an apology. The number of people who see the apology is like 10%. So yeah. Most of the country is still in the belief that, no, whatever the original story was fact. And I don't know that they're doing this on purpose. Like, oh, yeah, well, every once in a while when we really need to, we'll just throw out some total bullshit. It's possible. I'm sure the government's doing that. I mean, they're doing it and never backing down. But my point is this. If you're doing it locally, then I think to a certain degree you get to a point where it's so local that no matter how powerful that bullshit comes in, the rest of the country might think what's going on in your city is crazy. But the people in your city will see that and know that's absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
And I think if enough cities and enough communities, especially in big cities, you got to work with local communities. I think if that becomes strong enough, then I think those communities are going to start to see when other cities and communities are being called out on the media, that's probably bullshit too, especially when they've already been attacked in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, everything, I mean, all politics are local, you know, and if people vote ever how they're going to vote, mostly because of their little bubble, you know, and they think, like, I mean, you know, you ran for president, you understand the whole, you know, binary political system that we're stuck in. I mean, and now you're running for governor of Texas. I'm sure you've seen that the Republican Party here in Texas is trying to sue to have the Libertarian Party removed from the ballot, you know. and the thing is when you get down on that local level, though, you're doing face to face is always going to get you better results because people get to know you. You know, the problem is when you're running for, you know, a big office like governor, how in the world are you able to, you know, get in contact with that many
people?
And there's
a million cities in Texas just to go to them, which is,
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, but with the Boogaloo movement, you know, we go out in groups and we're essentially doing the same thing. We're not political in nature, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to show the people of our communities that we are part of this community. So what happens to it happens to us, and that we just want to help in whatever way the community needs. And you know, if that's met with resistance, then most of the time it's not mass resistance. It's usually a select few, because people understand you more. I have more in common with a guy I've never met that lives 30 blocks from me than the senator that I see on TV every day living in Washington, D.C.
Right.
So, you know, and I hear him speak all the time, but the guy living 10 blocks from me, I've never seen him, never met him, but I guarantee he and I know more about each other just through first contact because of where we come from.
And you know that when he's talking, that when your neighbor is talking, that he's not totally full of shit.
Right.
I see a question coming in. Where do I donate to the Boogaleer Corps?
Ah, so we are actually working on that right now. We have met with some challenges. We are in the process of starting up a nonprofit organization. called the United States Bugler Corps. I was actually hoping that the paperwork was going to be in the mail today, but I got home, checked the mail, and it's not here yet. So
wait,
right now,
they don't do all this stuff online. This is the 21st century.
So there was a lot of online that had to be done first, but then there's also things that need physical signatures and notarized stuff and all that. Who knew that the government had so much red tape to start a business?
Right.
But the purpose of the nonprofit organization is to help our communities, especially in the area of disaster relief. Being here in Texas, we just recently were hit by a hurricane. We actually have a lot of people that are with the United States Bugler Corps that are working down there currently, both in volunteer capacity and in capitalist capacity. You know, and same with Louisiana. And that is kind of the business that we want to get into. We would also like to get into a lot of community type stuff. Like when the school year rolls around, we'd like to be able to donate some school supplies, you know, get some backpacks, things like that for kids going back to school and everything. But it does look like our main focus is going to be on disaster relief. I have a background in disaster relief, you know, and it's something that I think all of us are pretty passionate about, because if you've ever been in a disaster area, you see some of the worst things happening, but you see the best of people when it's going on. I have done boat rescues, and I have seen people put their lives on the line for no reason at all, but just to be a good human being. And I think at its core, that is really what America is about, and that's what the Boogaloo movement is about in general, is I'm going to risk my life so that you can be free.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's you see, what's her name? Nancy Pelosi risked her life yesterday by going to the salon to get her hair cut. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
Yeah. No, you don't see this typically from politicians. And it's, you know, it's, I mean, we know this, but there are so many people who seem to be swept up in this, like, oh yeah, no, these people really care about us. And it's like, no, they live in a fucking ivory tower. They're, you know, they'll try to throw some money at the problem and say they, you know, so that they could say when they're up for reelection, oh, but I did so much for you. But, at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's like, who cares? You're not really helping. And it is absolutely communities. And what I really hate seeing is every time there's a disaster, there's always the government there's always these amazing people who want to help. And then there's the government actually getting in the way and saying, no, you can't do that. Harassing people. You can't bring these things down here. And even and I know everybody hates price gouging, but when they make anti-price gouging laws, they completely cease the movement of absolute necessities from non-disaster areas into the disaster areas. That's mm-hmm. what they're doing. They are halting it. So now, instead of paying a little bit more, you just don't get it. And it's but then they play like on the heartstrings, like, oh yeah, but they're just trying to make money and rip people off. Yeah, but they're delivering supplies. Let them deliver the supplies. There are organizations that are going to try to, you know, collect money and make donations, and like the Red Cross. I know they're not the greatest at that, but they're going to deliver some stuff and give it out for free, but they can only do so much. And when you have a capitalist opportunity, all these people are going to bring that down there, and then they want to shut that down.
Well, and if, you know, for anyone that's ever been in a disaster situation, you usually know that from the point of contact of the disaster until some sort of relief comes, you got about 72 hours that you are on your own. And if you're, whether you're by yourself with your family, with a group, or whatever the case may be, you know, do you know how much water someone has to drink in, you know, within 72 hours and right. how much food they need to be eating and within 72 hours? And, you know, when the like Red Cross or the government in general does this kind of virtue signaling of, you know, of we've come with relief supplies. People have already gone through the disaster. And yes, you know, those relief supplies, they're going to help, of course, but they've already seen the absolute worst end of it. And then someone comes to help. And that is the nature of disasters. I mean, I, you know, having done disaster relief I've done it for tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, you know, when it's going on, like, there's really nothing you can do. You just hope that the people that are stuck in the middle of it were able to prepare enough. But like you were saying, when you have price gouging laws and someone goes and they buy up all of the water in, you know, in the convenience store, and now there's no water left, but the store owner is like, hey, I can get a shipment in here, but it's going to cost me an exuberant amount of money because there is a disaster going on. So I'm going to have to raise the price. And also, my electricity is about to be out. My insurance is about to go up. My, you know, all of my store is about to be ruined and everything. So I have to raise the price. You know, I'm sorry, but you know, like if you need it, you're going to pay for it. And you know, so things like those price gouging laws, they hurt way more than they help.
Right. I'm seeing some questions coming in here about Breonna Taylor. You want to talk about that, since that's, I think, I know there are some hardcore Boog fans that are more into the, I guess, defensive violence or defense against violence, aspect of mm-hmm. this. You want to talk a little yeah. bit about Breonna Taylor and maybe just the government's I mean everything from war on drugs to no-knock raids and that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. So you know, following it, you know, Breonna Taylor happened shortly after Duncan Limp, and you know, two kind of similar cases of no-knock raids. You know, but I think one of the things that we get into, when we start getting into the nuts and bolts of a lot of these debates is we have this reaction whenever the event happens, we're automatically angry because there was a no-knock raid, which I completely disagree with and should not happen. And this innocent person was killed by police while they were sleeping, pretty much, you know? And then the argument or the reaction is so loud that the details start to get garbled and whatnot.
Right.
And, you know, in the case of Breonna Taylor, which was extremely tragic, and yes, the police were absolutely in the wrong. The judge who signed that no-knock warrant was absolutely in the wrong. The department that authorized the no-knock raid was in the wrong. But also the boyfriend that you know was the warrant was called on, you know, was doing things, you know, as more evidence has come out, was doing things that were against the law. Now, do I think that law that he was breaking is bullshit? Absolutely. Because if the guy was, you know, in the drug trade, like, I'm a free market guy, you know?
Right.
I don't see any reason for it to be illegal and whatnot. But what you have is you have all these different levels of this is all wrong, you know? And a lot of these instances that we're seeing lately, where even recently, the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, you have everyone was doing the wrong thing in that moment. He was 17 years old, and I don't know how he got separated from his group or whatever the case may be, but he was by himself. You know, and like, what kind of guys are you rolling with that they let you go through that by yourself? Obviously, that's not a good thing. And then, of course, the people that were attacking him, they're wrong as well.
Right. Yeah. And that was an interesting one, too, because there's, and this is how I feel about that, because I've seen, a lot of things pointed out. He was by himself. I saw someone talking about he didn't have any firearms retention training. Which, okay, fine. But it's like, at the same time, if there were, let's say, an invasion, right? Let's just say the Chinese come over with ships and they're doing a land invasion and we don't have enough troops. What are we going to do? We're going to say, okay, every man and woman and child grab a rifle and go fight them off, right? And it's like, it doesn't matter if you have the training or not. It's no, this is an emergency and we need all the help we can get. And so I think, you know, and you could say the same thing too. If you're, let's say you're 7 years old, you're home alone. Somebody breaks into your house. You don't know how to use a gun, but you know where your dad keeps it. You go and grab that gun to defend your home. I'm not going to complain that he used a gun without having proper training. I'm just going to be thankful that, you know, he didn't shoot himself in the process or, you know, anything crazy, but.
Right.
But there's that. And so, you know, if he was 17 and he was breaking the law, I don't care. If he's legitimately out there with the intention to protect someone from burning down his business, if he came from 20 minutes away, like, none of that stuff matters. Now, if he said like, oh, I don't like this protester because he said words to me that I didn't like and decided to shoot him, then of course that's wrong. But I really can't see it. I can't see faulting anybody for not having the right training or expertise. And especially, and this was actually in a Dave Champion video, he was talking about weapons retention and not to knock him, because I absolutely love him and everything he works on. But one of the things that he said was that he's a firearms trainer, and over the years he's trained so many people, and all these people who come to him who have had like Navy SEAL training, not probably not them, but like police, military, FBI, like all these people come to him for firearms training, and none of them have ever had any kind of weapons retention training. So how can you fault this 17-year-old kid for not having, you know, that type of training? And it's like, yeah, okay, mistakes are made, but at the end of the day, I still got to give him props for pretty much doing everything in self-defense. And yeah, maybe he should have done some things better, but he did not go out, in my eyes, to you know, he did not initiate aggression against anybody else. And I think that's probably the most important part of all of this.
Yeah, I mean, for real, like, I definitely commend the kid for, I mean, anybody in this situation, you know, should defend themselves, you know, at the proper levels. And his life was most definitely in danger. I mean, someone was about to execute him on the street. We all saw the video and whatnot, you know. But I think, you know, and even beyond that, we're inundated with these videos constantly of police shootings or riots or things like that. And everybody wants it to be black and white. Everybody wants there to be a good guy and a bad guy. And there are a whole lot of these cases where there is no good guy. And, the police acted wrong and the person they were trying to apprehend acted wrong, you know. And I wouldn't say that's necessarily the case with the Breonna Taylor case, because, I mean, essentially what happened was no-knock raid. You think someone's breaking into your house, so you fire on them. It's just they had more firepower, so you lost the fight.
Right.
You know, which is a terrible system. You know, I mean, the no-knock raids are just awful.
Yeah, and what's absolutely terrible about that is like the whole reason that they justify no-knock raids from the get-go is, well, it's a drug situation, and we know if we knock that they're probably going to run and try to flush the drugs down the toilet. So basically, mm-hmm. and you know, statistically, if you don't knock, you kick the door down, people are going to think someone's breaking in and they might defend themselves. You might see them with a gun and shoot them. And you know the incidence of killing people in no-knock raids is much higher than if you just knock. But we don't want the drugs flushed. That's...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, it's
and
like...
I would say if any police, you know, are watching this or see this or whatever, please don't no-knock my house. Like, literally just come and knock on the door and I will answer and I'm not going to be violent. Like, come, you know, pick me up on my way to work, pull me over, like, you know, something like that, you know, but if you flashbang me or, you know, like I hear my door getting kicked in, I'm probably going to react like most every other person. And I'm going to think I'm in a defense situation. I have to protect my family. I have to, you know, make sure that my children are not being drug out of their bedroom by some nefarious actor. And I'm going to do what I have to. You know, whoever thought, like, okay, I've got this really good idea. We're going to break into somebody's house, but we're going to get a warrant for it. Like, that was the dumbest idea ever.
Yeah. Especially in America. But so, okay, yeah. I'm seeing a lot of questions come up here about Save Our Children. What's your stance on that? Why does everybody have to say stance? That word is like stance. That's like the meme word. What's your stance on that? What's the Boogaloo stance on that?
So as far as the USBC is concerned, Save Our Children is something that actually should be taken a lot more absolute than what the hashtag seemed to mean, because Save Our Children seem to be mostly a Republican conservative type thing. And although I didn't get to go out to one of the Save the Children rallies, I had a lot of people that are with us that did. And of course, we're Boogaloo. We are anti-pedophile. Like, I personally disagree with the wood chipper idea. I think they should be put on an island.
I was just going to ask, wood chipper or guillotine?
Island. Oh, so here's my idea. Put on an island. They still get due process. They're put on an island and people pay to hunt them. I'm going to make some money off of it. I'm a capitalist.
There you go.
So, you know, of course, like, we have a serious problem with child trafficking in the United States, but where I think the Save the Children narrative fell short was, what about all the migrant children that are being detained by the United States government? I care about them too.
Right.
You know, when you say save the children, I mean, I'm looking at that as
all children matter.
Yes. All children matter, you know? But yeah, Yeah, I am all about the Save the Children movement. This Saturday, I will actually be in Allen, Texas for Justice for Sophie. I'm sure a lot of you saw the video of the young girl Sophie and the terrible situation that she's in. So there's going to be as many people as we can get showing up in Allen, Texas to get justice for Sophie, because that's important. I mean, like, if we don't stand up for people that can't defend themselves, then we're just cowards, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, that's, I think that's really important too. And something that's really often overlooked. So when we think about self-defense, we usually think about self-defense, but mm-hmm. self-defense actually works on other people too. So, you know, anything where you can justifiably say, well, that was an excessive use of force, but I was defending myself. You can use that same force to defend another person. And it's, I think, even more important to do that, because ultimately, if our only defense is ourselves, then there's a very good chance that at some point in time, we're going to be overpowered and bad things are going to happen. We mm-hmm. as a society, we've kind of delegated that to the police, hopefully trusting that they are going to be the ones to come and save us when a situation arises. But they're not always right there. And I've seen this so many times. Somebody falls into the train tracks and it's like everybody just stands around there filming it instead of putting their hand down and offering to lift the guy up. I saw a video the other day yep. of a guy, it was in a subway station, and a guy's on top of a girl trying to rape her. It said attempted rape, so hopefully nothing. But I mean, he's still like on top of her and just being, it's, and then there's like 5 or 10 people standing around with their phones recording the whole thing. A couple of them are yelling, stop, stop. But it's like nobody's, jump in there and kick him in the head and get him off of her. Like we need to take that responsibility for ourselves and to help others, because ultimately we might find ourselves in that position one time. And, you know, if you don't want to do it to help somebody else, do it to help yourself. Change the society so that we help people when they're in need, because one day you're going to need it. We have to start looking at that. And I think, to me, this is what I see about the Boogaloo movement, is it's people who are willing to, you know, I've seen so many people go to these protests armed with the intent of defending businesses, just like Kyle, but in bigger groups, a little bit older, more yeah. training. So many people did that. And it was amazing to see that, because those are the businesses that did not get burned down in the riots. And if we had more people doing that, more people being vigilant about this, that I saw a small, it was like CCTV from like a small convenience store where it was just 20 or 30 people ran in there and they just started stealing everything off the shelves. Imagine if there was one armed person standing in front of that store, they would have said, yeah, no, screw that. Because you have the same thing. Yeah, the one person with a gun might not be able to take down 30 people. But out of those 30 people, not a single one of them wants to be the first one to get shot. And that's enough of a deterrent to keep those people from committing those crimes.
Yeah. And you know, so I'll tell a couple of stories of my experiences in this movement. And then, so first off, the Boogaloo movement as a whole is not just one thing. There are so many groups, you know, and everyone, you know, kind of has their own system. You know, like some are very loose, some are more organized, some are very localized. And so a lot of times there is alliances formed between different groups, you know. Here in Texas, there is down in the capital area around Austin, Texas Guerrillas is the group down there that has, you know, been doing what they do, defending private property, making sure that protesters are not, you know, harassed as much as possible and everything. And, you know, for us, I'm like, okay, that's their area of operation. So whenever we go to that area, they're in charge, you know, because that's their home and they know how to protect it. So on August 1st, we went down to Austin. It was a week after Garrett Foster was shot and killed, you know, in Austin during a protest. And there's a memorial there for Garrett. And honestly, you know, I know there's a lot of back and forth on, you know, was Garrett good, bad, you know, this and that, or the other, who was he? What it comes down to is things have gotten so chaotic that people feel like they need to walk around in the streets armed, and people need, and the conversation has gotten so loud that no one is willing to listen, and someone died. That is what happened. Someone died. It does not matter what side of the spectrum he was on. I never met Garrett, but I do know some of his friends. And from what I understand, he was a libertarian thinker and whatnot. But we go down there because there seemed to be a lot of threats to his memorial, and a lot of threats being pointed at the Black Lives Matter protesters. And so we go down there to support that. We go down there to help and make sure that property's not destroyed and people's lives aren't taken. And all in all, there were about 65 of us that showed up. And we had a little situation where we called the Convoy of Chaos, where four pickup trucks filled with various Boogaloo boys from different groups loaded up and drove around Austin, Texas, as the police tried to figure out what the hell was going on, and followed us with helicopters and vehicles. And InfoWars had drones following us, taking pictures.
Nice.
And they were saying that we were an Antifa hit squad.
Oh, wow.
Which obviously not true. They said that we were an Antifa sniper hit squad, that we were trying to invade buildings and set up Overwatch positions.
Was that the mainstream news, or was that Alex Jones that came up with that?
That was Alex Jones.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for your help, Alex.
Yeah, I know. I was like, seriously, you know, come on. And then Daily Mail was out there. Their piece was probably one of the funniest pieces I've ever read, because I read it after everything, after we got back to our hotels and everything. They literally had a picture of the people from our group, and it said 3%. And underneath it, they had a picture of people from our group, and it said BLM. And then you scrolled down, and there was a picture of people from our group, and it said left-wing activists. And then you scroll down a little bit more, and there was another picture of people from our group, and it said right-wing extremists. That is the best reporting I have ever seen in my life.
Wow.
But so we end up at Garrett's memorial for the protest, and you know, things get rolling and whatnot. And we always you know, tell the protesters, like, hey, you know, you guys understand why we're here, keep the peace and whatnot. There are things that, you know, we can't get involved in, like if you go block the road, if you're standing in the middle of the street, I can't help you. You know, you're causing people to, you know, the flow of traffic can't happen. You know, I mean, honestly, it's out of my hands at that point. Things like that happen. The police come out, they run the horses through the crowd, you know, crowd kind of gets dispersed. But at one point after dark, we're standing around Garrett's memorial, and the police just rush us. An entire line of police with bicycles holding them like shields just come running at us. And we're on the sidewalk. We're completely, you know, within the bounds of you know, being like, we're legally there. And they surround a few of us and they tell us, if you don't get outside of our perimeter, you'll be arrested. Hey, you with the gun, get outside our perimeter, you'll be arrested. And I'm like, where's your perimeter? You guys just like rushed us.
Right.
And I don't even know what's going on right now. And I don't even know why you're doing this. later on, I would find out that they were arresting someone around the corner and they were forming a perimeter, you know, to keep their officers safe, I guess. But so we move back and we're standing about 6 feet away from the police line. And all of a sudden, four officers from Austin Police Department draw their weapons on us, like completely unprovoked. And here we are staring down four barrels. And, you know, it's all happening really fast, but in your mind, it's not. It's everything's going real slow. And you're sitting, I remember thinking like, this is the moment when I prove to myself, do I actually believe in the non-aggression principle? Am I ready to get shot for what I believe in? And I turn to the guys and I tell everybody, get online, because that's my first thought in military mind is we like some sort of defensive structure. If we're going to get shot, like we're going to be in a way that we can defend ourselves. And then I see one of the state troopers put his hand on one of the officer's shoulders, just as one of our people starts yelling at the officers with their weapons drawn and telling them, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why do you pull your weapons on us? We're not being aggressive at all. And the state trooper looked at the Austin officer and gave him that look of like, you just fucked up. You need to put that weapon away right now. And they holstered their weapons. We had a sergeant come over and start talking to us. But at this point, we're still online. And a lieutenant comes up and he tells me, like, you know, hey, you can't block the sidewalk. Like, we can arrest you for that or whatever because you're impeding traffic, even though the police are blocking the sidewalk 6 feet in front of us. I didn't really get that. But, you know, so we break our line because we're not feeling like we're going to get shot now. And I, you know, we're telling the sergeant, like, hey, your officers pulled their weapons on us for no reason whatsoever. And we need to be able to file a complaint. Well, he kind of gave us the runaround. And long story short, we didn't get to file a complaint. But I totally commend everybody that was in that line with us that night because they got online. No one ever raised their weapons. No one took an aggressive posture. They were ready to sacrifice what needed to be sacrificed for the cause. And I'm glad, I'm very happy that I got to come home to my family. I'm glad that nobody was hurt that night, but, those kind of situations are reality. And if you're going to be in this movement, and if, especially if you're going to be on the street, you need to understand what the stakes are. And I mean, that's it. The stakes are, they're pretty damn high.
Right. And it's, I mean, it's really disturbing to hear that story because you've got, you would have been in the right. They point a gun at you for absolutely no reason. You would have been in the right to point yours right back. But of course, in public opinion, it's well, no, you don't point your gun at a police officer ever. Like, you know, the never hit a woman. Like, even if she's like trying to, like, even if she's like going at you with a hammer or a sword or whatever, never hit a woman back, right? Like, the extreme is like so ridiculous. Never talk back to a police officer. Never point a gun at a police officer. Even if what they're doing is illegal, even if what they're doing is a crime, even if what they're doing is threatening your life, never. And it's like, that's absolute nonsense. And so I can see the struggle in having to decide, do we really want to be defensive about this? Because ultimately, too, I mean, this is a gang war, right? You had a gang of what, 20 people? And they have a gang of thousands, right? Not just the officers who are right there, but if they decide that you were wrong, they're going to issue warrants. They're going to have the entire Austin Police Department, the Sheriff's Department, the state police, the entire government is going to be after you, and they have all of your information. They know where you live, where you sleep. They know, they track your credit card. They know everything, and it's extremely dangerous. That is a huge, powerful gang that I think we understand it shouldn't be that big and powerful, but when it becomes confrontational with you, even when you stand your ground and rightfully defend yourself, that can absolutely escalate things to where they're just going to go absolutely berserk on you, and there's no way out of it. And I think it's very dangerous. It's very sad that's the structure and the world that we live in. But I know that's absolutely something that we have to consider whenever we go into these situations.
Well, and this is what when I talk to people in the movement and, you know, about like, what kind of world do we want to live in? And, you know, we look at human history and just civilization, how it's built. The fact of the matter is that whoever is in charge, the reason they're in charge is because they have the most armament. I mean, any civilization in history, whoever is in charge has the most armament. So the founding fathers were like, hey, self-defense is a thing. It's a natural right. It pre-exists any type of government. So we're going to put this amendment here that says government is not allowed to infringe on your right to bear arms, essentially making the United States a system the way it's supposed to work, where the people have more armament than the government. So the people retain the power. But
right,
here we go.
Well,
and when you're you know, in the situation where we were in, where we were split up into probably three separate groups, because there was about 65 of us total that were down there in that area, but there was about 1,000 police officers, at least 800 police officers. So, wow. You know,
yes, there was no. Outnumbered.
Exactly. There's no tactical advantage. You just have to hope that you don't get shot.
And I think what's really interesting to point out about this too, and especially in Texas, where, you know, I think Texas is one of the states with the highest ratio of guns to people. Just having the guns doesn't solve that problem, because it's also the organization. Because if you've got 10 million Texans who have guns, who are going to say, yeah, we have our guns and we're willing to use them against the government when necessary and when right. If if your small group gets in a little scuffle with the police, how many of those 10 million people know who you are and are going to be organized with your group versus the organization of the state, where and you know, we're talking about people who are like, no, I'm only going to use my gun when it's right to do so, whether it's against an individual or an individual who works for the government, I need to know that it's right for me to do that. That's a moral mm-hmm. issue. But then you look at how the state is organized, and none of that matters. It's what orders am I following? And so you take that out of the equation, and so you have this giant organization of tens of thousands of officers who are just like, oh yeah, go shoot that, go arrest that guy, and if he resists, kill him. And they will follow that order. And
yeah,
that's, I mean, and there are thousands of, like, that's I think the, I think that's even more of a problem. I mean, yes, the imbalance of arms is huge. And we've solved that problem now. But I think now we have to solve this organizational issue where, it's the order mm-hmm. followers are organized into large groups and we are not. Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when I try and appeal to just the average American that is me, really, you know, like, I mean, I have a day job and I'm trying to feed my family and keep my lights on, you know. But, you know, that is not involved in a movement like this is you talk to them. First off, no one has even read the Constitution lately. I mean, seriously, like it's not that long of a document. It's really not that difficult to swallow either, you know? And I seem to get, at least the radical left is like, fuck the Constitution. We want to throw it all out and burn everything down and be a Marxist utopia. Right. You know, like, okay, all right. You know, like I know where you stand and it's against me. Okay, we're good. You know, but how many times do we hear conservative Republicans, you know, talk about, you know, Trump's upholding the Constitution. He's our only way that we're going to have, you know, keep our constitutional government and everything. And they can't even answer simple constitutional questions like where does the authority on immigration lie per the Constitution? You know, and like they'll, you know, their answer is Trump. I mean, it's right. Like the dumbest shit ever
at the wall,
you know, and you're right. You know, it's frustrating. It is so frustrating because I know that there are people on those political spectrums, you know, of the Democrat and Republican Party that they actually are libertarians. They just want to be left alone. And, you know, I just want to go to work and do my job and spend time with my family and not be interfered with. But those parties prey on their fears by saying, if you allow this party to get elected, then they're going to harm you. When the truth is, both parties are going to harm you.
Right. Yeah, you know, I mean it's a complete misuse of words, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier about how you know they'll change the definition of words. But I guess in this case they're not even changing the definition; they're using it as a buzzword to like get your attention. Like, oh, I know you think it means something great, and so we're going to use that word to get your attention and steal your vote. It's absolutely insane. So I want to thank you for coming on. We've gone over the normal time of the show, but this is really been an amazing conversation. But I want to give you an opportunity. I know a couple of people were asking, how do I join? I just want to give you an opportunity if you want to plug any websites or contact information if anybody's interested in getting involved either with you or in their own local communities. Go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get involved with the United States Boogaleer Corps, you can find us on MeWe and the Big Luau Fire Pit. That is our big tent group. From there, you'll be able to get plugged into a state group, and the state groups will help you get plugged into local groups. You can also check out let's see, Boog Corp, B-O-O-G, C-O-R-P-S .org. That is our official website. And I'm going to plug the Tree of Liberty website, but currently it is down due to the hurricane. The host was screwed up in the hurricane, but it's treeofliberty.me. And follow the Hibiscus Society on YouTube. You can check out a few of our videos. We've got some pretty cool ones up there. There's not many. We're still working on some content. And pretty soon there will be a Hibiscus Society podcast coming out. I know the guys have been working tirelessly on that for the last few weeks and everything. So Big Luau Fire Pit on MeWe. Yeah, we all got banned from Facebook. So
I'm surprised I'm still on there. Although I
am too. So there was another wave of mass bans today. About an hour before the show started.
Maybe I need to go check.
right. So yeah. The best way, and then you can find me on MeWe, Obi Boog Kenobi, OBI BOOG KENOBI.
And I love this name, the Hibiscus Society. It's just like, it's hilarious. I love it. But
our
so
PR
everyone's asking and shouting garlic bread, what is garlic bread?
Oh, so that is the Boogaloo movement as a whole is full of inside jokes. The United States Boogaleer Corps is full of garlic bread jokes. So it was when the fire pit first started, I made a very sensual video of me eating garlic bread, and it has sparked a garlic bread fetish among the troops.
Oh,
so
wow.
I have to mention garlic bread and my love for garlic bread. And
I feel like I need to make some garlic bread now, because I haven't had any in such a long time, and I love that stuff. I like when I was a kid, my mom would like make homemade garlic bread, and I would just take like so much garlic and just like it just tasted so strong, and like they would complain that my breath stank for weeks.
Hey,
oh man,
it's the smell of victory.
Oh yeah, that is and it gets the blood sucking vampire government out of your bedroom and bank account and everything else, I guess, right?
Absolutely. Kids, eat your garlic bread.
Awesome. Well, all right, Chris, thank you so much again for having this conversation, for opening up about the Boogaloo, for hopefully shedding some light on what this is really about. This isn't a violent movement. This is a peaceful movement that is protecting our American society, our American rights and freedoms from government overreach, from violent protesters and riots. And you know, this is really something that we should be embracing. We need to just not listen to this nonsense that the mainstream media wants to give us. Yes, of course, there will be bad apples in any group, in any movement. There were bad apples at the post office a few years ago and I'm sure a lot of them are still there just quietly throwing your mail in the trash. Actually, I did see that on video the other day. There was a postal woman just dumping a bucket of mail into a dumpster. There are bad apples everywhere.
Imagine what that's like when the election comes up.
Yeah, that's probably maybe it was even staged for that exact reason. Who knows?
Right.
But all right, Chris, thank you again so much. I do want to say
you
one more time, if you want to support the show, if you like what you heard, make sure to share this video, invite your friends to see it, subscribe, follow, do all that great stuff. And of course, go to taxationstheft.cards, pick up a really awesome t-shirt or a really awesome hat or any of the other stuff that you have there. And reach out, give me your comments and questions. If you have an interesting idea for a show, send in a suggestion. Taxationistheft.cards, we've got a contact form over there. and taxationistheft.info. Actually, taxationistheft.info is where the contact form is, and that's also where the podcast is hosted. But we're merging that all together. We're going through some transitions and making this stuff all nicer. But anyway, you get the point. Taxation is theft, guys. I'll see you next time. Have a good night.